This is Tribeca Talks, our favorite conversations recorded live at the Tribeca Film Festival. I'm Leah Sarbib. It's been a theme throughout his career that Common is always looking to grow. He got his start in the 80s as a hip-hop artist. He quickly became one of the most influential musicians in the genre and went on to win 2 Grammys. In the early 2000s, he started acting. He won the Academy Award and his 3rd Grammy for Glory, the song he and John Legend wrote for Ava DuVernay's film Selma. He also co-starred in the movie as civil rights movement leader James Bevel. Not long thereafter, he wrote the song Letter to the Free for Ava DuVernay's 13th, a documentary about mass incarceration in the U.S. Letter to the Free won Common an Emmy, making him the first rapper to ever win an Emmy, a Grammy, and an Academy Award. For the past few years, Common has been deeply engaged in social justice and advocacy work around mass incarceration, mental health, and voting. His Common Ground Foundation empowers high school students from underserved communities, and his Imagine Justice Foundation advocates for criminal justice reform. We premiered the extended version of the music video for Letter to the Free, directed by Bradford Young, at the 2017 Tribeca Film Festival. Common sat down with author and filmmaker Nelson George after the screening.
Hello, everyone. How are you? I think we should start by talking about this amazing film we just watched, Letter to the Free. What sort of inspired this?
Well, peace to everyone out there. Greetings and grateful to be here. Thank you, Nelson, for being here, and thank Tribeca. What inspired, this was inspired by me being able to have a conversation with Michelle Alexander, who wrote The New Jim Crow. And I really started awakening when it comes to the subject of mass incarceration and how much it had been affecting people I know, people in America, people that I don't know, people I care about, everyone. It's been affecting us. And I really was like, I have to do something about it. So I wanted to write about it, and I found out that Ava DuVernay was doing her film 13th. And I asked, could I please have a song on it? And I started kicking to her a little bit of that song, Letter to the Free. And I got Kareem Riggins and Robert Glasper to produce the song.
Kareem was the drummer and Glasper was the pianist in the film?
Yeah, so I got them to produce the song, got Bilal and who else? We got Elena and to play flute and Roy Hargrove and all these great musicians. And then I've been working with Bradford Young, who directed the film.
Absolutely.
And I was like, Brad, can we please do something for this? And he was in the middle of prepping for Star Wars Han Solo. But but he said he would do something. And for me, it was like getting the opportunity to do something, this music, this film, because Bradford is a filmmaker, and something that has the activist component to it.
Yeah, this film, it really encompasses the 3 threads of your career, which is obviously music, film, cinema, and activism. And talk to you a little bit more about the details. Where was it shot? How did it all come, you know?
Well, we shot at a jail in right outside of Queens. Really, it literally came about, like, I called Bradford. I was like, man, can we please do something? He was like, okay, I don't have the idea yet, but I believe we can get something together for it. Anytime Bradford hits me and says, man, I love that song, I'm like, well, you want to do a visual for it? You know, like, that's what I did. So we filmed it there. And as I watched it this time, I really got a new understanding for it, because when I look at what Bradford does, it's really art, man. It's really beautiful.
I'm going to assume everyone knows Bradford Young, but maybe not.
Okay, well, Bradford Young is this incredible artist, director of photography. He filmed Selma. He filmed Arrival. He was Oscar nominated for Arrival. He did one of Ava's earlier movies. What else has he done?
Pariah.
Mother Joy did Pariah. So he's this incredible brother that's super intelligent, has so much heart, and I formed a good bond with him from Selma. And he, you know, he just has appreciation for culture and art. And he was like, he really keeps it to the ground. I love that about him. So it's something about his spirit. And I was like, man, thank you.
I watched it. It reminded me of a jazz. It's a jazz film in a sense. There's a film called, I think it's Stompin' the Blues, Jivin' the Blues. There's some films from the 40s and 50s have the black and white aesthetic.
Yeah.
And it felt like, also the musical, even though people say you're a hip-hop artist, this is, the music here was very jazz-oriented.
Yeah, I mean, I love jazz. I was, you know, I'm an artist. I don't even like limit myself to just say, okay, I'm just a hip-hop artist. Of course, my heart is hip-hop, the culture of hip-hop. But when I get in my car, I listen to jazz a lot. And I listen to gospel now, you know, like, feel like I'm getting old. I'm listening to gospel. but I used to only listen to it in church. But now I listen to it. But it is a jazz. I mean, it feels like a jazz film in many ways. And obviously, you know, Robert Glasper and Kareem Riggins have jazz backgrounds too. And so does Bilal. And just the music, the music orientation. I think in many ways, Bradford's style to me is jazz in a way, because when I listen to jazz, the thing about jazz music that I love is I put it on because it allows my mind to go places. Like, it allows my mind to float.
Right.
And I think, you know, when you watch some of Bradford's work, it's not like telling you everything. It allows your mind to go and create part of the story, or connect what the story is, or determine what the story is for you. And that's what jazz does for me. It's like I can sit there and my mind goes anywhere.
Well, there's also, I was thinking 2001 reference, the obelisk.
Oh, which one?
The black object that's floating.
Yeah.
Because I made me flick back to Kubrick, Stanley Kubrick. So I'm curious, you don't want to interpret, but what to you, what is the black object stand for?
Well, that black space for me was like, to me it represents the infinite thing about blackness, and blackness can't be defined in one time or space. Actually, I just wrote that in one of my new songs, in a new bar. I said, locked in, trying to get out of a sunken place, a blackness that can't be defined by time and space. And I'm thinking, like, when I look at that, I think, like, how infinite blackness is, how diverse it is, how beautiful it is, some of the pain that's in it. And that's what I get when I look at that opus. And I'm like, I don't even ask, well, why did we do that, Bradford? What is that? I just like look at it and be like, all right, what does it make me feel? It's like going to a museum. Mm. And I'm like, okay, let the artists did what they're supposed to do. Let me let my mind go to where it should go and it interprets it the way I want to feel about it. So that, for me, it makes me feel like how infinite we are in our blackness. And yet,
in a sense, trapped in a space.
Yeah. Well, when I watched the film this time, it was like, I really felt, because I just recently went to prisons in California and visited some people who were incarcerated. We performed there, and I got to go through I walked on the yards and went into some of the cell blocks. And it was like, when I watched it this time, I felt like, wow, it feels like so much humanity and talent and gifts that's locked up right now. So many people who have so much to offer to the world, but they're locked up. And we as a society don't pay much attention to it. You know, to be honest, getting to be a part of 13th, getting to do this documentary, getting to do this film, it all led me to want to do more active work when it comes to changing the policies and learning more about mass incarceration. So then when I watched the film, I was like, man, seeing all these talented artists in these cells was like, man, with so much to offer. So many people have a lot to offer. And it's kind of, you know, it's sad, but we moving towards the change, I believe.
Is it fair to say that you've been going through sort of a transformation in the last couple of years? It sounds like you've always been someone associated with more conscious lyrics and conscious work in your music. But it does feel like in your life itself, something's been happening in here.
Yes, I do have to say that I feel like I've been going through the transformation of learning what my purpose is more and realizing that it can't just be rapping about it. It can't just be only making films about it. Of course, that affects the world. Like, I know how much hip-hop has affected my way of thinking and, like, listening to the music. So, of course, in art, I want to be able to change things in that way, too. But I call it active hope in being able to just go to places and figure out what can be changed, like policy-wise, what can be changed from an economic standpoint, what can be changed when it comes to some of the education or the police systems that's going on there. And it's not, and I think it really, it did start for me with Selma, to be honest, because I was sitting down with people who worked. I remember Andrew Young said to us, Ambassador Andrew Young, on the first day of rehearsal, said to us, what are you willing to die for? Live for that. And he was like, that was the mentality of the people of the civil rights movement. Well, we willing to die for freedom. We willing to die for equality. So we going to live for it. So they live for it every day. And I was like, man, I'm not putting my energy into activism every day. I'm not every day thinking like, okay, what am I going to do to improve the world and change this person's life? And I felt like I have to do that because I've been given access and platform. Mm-hmm. When John Legend and I got an Academy Award, I was happy as hell. I was geeked. But I also was like, man, this is for me to do more of God's work. This is for me to do more in the world. Like, you got to do it. Like, you got to do it. And now I tell people, man, it don't matter. Like, you don't have to be an entertainer. You don't have to be an athlete. You don't have to have money. The change is really, I just identifying things within yourself, your family, your community, and just targeting those things and working towards that change. And it's like, you can use your abilities, if you're a teacher, educator, photographer, just to do good out there in the world, just to perform it. To me, performing at excellence is changing the world. Like, if you perform in excellence and in your greatness, it reaches a higher purpose. But then when you do it and you know it's affecting other people's lives and you have the opportunity to feed other people, then that's when, you know, it's effective. And that's what I kind of have struck within myself is like, I go to this church in L.A., and the pastor is called One Church, and the pastor always talk about two people go there. Yeah, it's all good. And the pastor always talking about his name, PT, Pastor Teray. He always talking about being in alignment. So now it's like I'm working. The reason why you feel me saying like, yeah, I want to do the work is because everything I do needs to be in alignment with what my purpose is. So that's where the work comes in. Plus, I was feeling a little like subconscious about when people would call me an activist, and I saw what real activists do. And I'm like, oh, I'm not an activist just because I rap about socially conscious things. Or I'm not an activist because I got a foundation. You know, it's got to be more things done for me to be an activist. Yeah.
Ava has had a profound effect on you. This film is dedicated to her. Could you talk a little bit about how that relationship has shaped your thinking?
Well, one day my daughter hit me and was like, man, you know, Ava, Malcolm X, you Martin Luther King. Like, she was trying to, because she a Howard now, she was trying to say I was softer than Ava is when it comes to the revolutionary aspect. And I was, like, embarrassed that she would say that about me. Don't get me wrong. Like, I do feel like, you know, Ava does have a unapologetic and unashamedly blackness about her, and she embraces that and just does it universally. But I was like, damn, I do that too, don't I? But I think, you know, sometimes I'm always talking about love and extending the hand in love and like embracing people. Like, even people, like, I've learned to embrace people that may not think the way I think or may be on the opposite side when it comes to politics. They may be on the opposite side on many things, but I said my first step is to do what our former first lady says, to go high when they go low. So that's my mentality. So when my daughter said that, I was like, man, this is what it really is. I tried to explain to her. But my relationship with Ava is really inspiring. She's like, for me, through working with her, talking with her, I see somebody who is dedicated to putting black culture and black faces out in the world in the purest way, in a truthful way, in a way that we don't get to see it all the time. And it reminds me, you know, you know when you get around those friends, Nelson, that just Well, you black like that. So, but you know, you be like, you get around friends that just remind you like of who you are and what your mission is, and to not be afraid. I think she has a lot of that in her, and she's very talented. And to me, one of her biggest gifts is knowing how to put people together. Like, because I've met some of the most talented and some of my best friends in the industry are people that I've met working on projects with Ava. So she has that talent too. But yeah, I got to say she's an inspiration. And her last two movies, I've chased her to do songs for them. So, yeah.
So I got to take this opportunity to talk about hip hop and its relationship to social activism right about now. Your career, you've always been, you got labeled a conscious rapper, which was a particular 90s label, I think. Because you never really fell off into the, I don't want to use any cliche words, but the more violent storytelling.
Right.
But now you look at the landscape, what do you see, not to where hip-hop is, but in terms of activism, that relationship to the Black Lives Movement, et cetera, Matter movement, do you feel like the culture, that hip-hop is part of that movement, or is it reflecting it in a good way? Because, I mean, I would say for me, it feels like the music used to be part of the drive of reflecting all the aspects. And it does feel to me like the culture of what is contemporary hip-hop is not doing that. How do you feel about that?
Well, yeah, I definitely have to first say that, like, it was music in the 80s, late 80s and 90s was truly reflective of a movement. And it was the movement of empowerment, black love, consciousness, just being aware. It was all the above. And, you know, obviously things go through, it goes through evolution and changes. I don't think right now as a whole we have that in hip hop. At that time, the majority of the hip hop was a pro-black movement. We had P.E., we had Poor Righteous Teachers, Brand Nubian, you know, Big Daddy Kane would do his pro-black song. It was like
Mo D,
like N.W.A. had stuff that was, you know, saying something too. So I don't feel like we have that as a whole in hip hop. I don't think hip hop is the place we go to listen for that voice of like, okay, this is the revolution. This is how we changing things. But there are artists that do it.
Absolutely.
Like a Kendrick Lamar.
Absolutely.
And I also think, you know, the Chance, though he may not speak in like, okay, this is black consciousness, he has a consciousness about
Absolutely.
Him, a self-awareness, yeah. and a spirituality. And I think I don't want to overlook that, because right. spirituality was something that was
Absolutely.
Powerful
Very much
in hip hop.
Like Absolutely.
Islam, whether it was Islamic or.
Or 5 percenters or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. The 5 percenters. But so I'm saying that hip hop as we don't have it as much, but it still exists. And I still can go to some hip hop. But now, you know, I go to great speakers like Bryan Stevenson, you know, books to learn or listen to. You know, the people who talk about politics, and I honestly try to make my own, get my own discernment to decide what I think, where I think the world is. And I also really believe that I do my best to put my spirituality and belief in the creator before anything, because that in itself, no matter where I go, if I carry that with me, then I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So.
Well, you know, it's, you just, your last album, Black America Again, that's your first album in a while, wasn't it?
Well, it's probably the first album some people knew came out. I released something. I released another album prior to that I forgot the name of it. it's called The Dream of the Believer.
The Dream of the Believer.
The Dream of the Believer. And that was, I think that was in 2014.
That's right.
So, yeah, well, I mean, you know. I don't release an album every year. I would like to, but I sometimes, like, first of all, I got to find things that I want to write about. And then at the same token, I feel like I love doing other things too. So I only want to do music when I'm really inspired.
It's a good question though. Is it harder as you become an older artist or just an older person to go back in the studio and create rhyme? Because there is very few MCs. You know, traditionally, it's like if you, the cliche is like the first two or three albums are the best albums in most people's careers. And, you know, Jay has had a long career, and he's a, kind of a peer of yours, and Kanye now. But it's a rare MC that goes 10 deep. Yeah. Do you think it's just because, is it the nature of hip-hop, the form, or is it just maturity? Did you, like, other things take up your time?
I think in any art form, like, if you really, first and foremost, are passionate about it and love it and are willing to be humble and grow through it, that means listen. Like, listen to life and listen to the world and travel and do different things, then you have an opportunity to try to grow in that field and grow in that art form and evolve in that art form. But it does take some humility. It takes the passion. It takes knowing that you're going to fall. Like, every project is not going to touch people like the way you want it to. So I would say, I believe the reason why I continue to make music is because I want to do it for a purpose, and I wanted to have something. And I do have the blessing of being able to go out and do films and work on my acting and work on that craft and work on producing films. So I have another creative outlet. So I just don't have to do it when I don't feel like doing it. And man, I tell every artist it's always important to grow. Like, the reason why I can do it now at this age is because I'm still seeking to get better. I want to be better. So I'll listen to a Kendrick album and be like, damn, that's dope, and get inspired. I'll read some James Baldwin and be like, could I ever write this good? I'll, you know, go see some films that are really great and just, or read an article. It's, you know, I might read Ta-Nehisi's book and be like, Ta-Nehisi Coates' book, Between the World and Me, and be like, man, this is inspiring. So I guess I can go to new places for inspiration. It used to be strictly, not strictly hip-hop, but it was mostly hip-hop. I would want to write a rap because I heard how good Nas said this, or Andre 3000 said this, or Biggie said this. And I'm like, oh, I can do that shit. Let me go. Yo, I got to, you know, it's that. But then now it's like another level and another calling to do it for. So that allows me to be that artist. And I also feel like I kind of want to evolve and do something that people haven't seen. Like, I just formed a group with Robert Glasper and Kareem Riggins called August Green. We are like, you know, it's like jazz to a certain, but it's not jazz music, but it's like things evolve and things change. And I feel like I'm grateful to be able to just be open to that change and be passionate about. I love writing raps. I like saying my raps to people and like people responding, and that's what this started with. Me walking down the street with my cousin and kicking a rhyme, and my homies responded, and I was like, oh man, this is dope. Like, so, and I still get that feeling if I kick a rhyme and people like it.
Yeah, Robert Glasper, just if you're not aware of his body of work, I think is one of the most innovative arranger musicians out here today. And one of the things he does really well is finds ways to integrate hip-hop and what you would call jazz well, and he's one of the few who really understands both. Because now you're seeing a generation of quote-unquote jazz musicians who grew up on hip-hop. And so their reference, it's not going to be, they're not going to reference a George Gershwin, they're going to reference a P.E. song or something like that. So it's an interesting mix, you and them, because he's already coming from this side and you're coming from this side.
Yeah, well, I was fortunate through working with Bilal, and I've worked with Kareem Riggins since 95. I met him while he was playing with Roy Hargrove. So I met Rob around 98, 99. And, you know, at the end of the day, he was going to the new school, Bilal and he and a couple of their other friends. And I met those guys, and they just were super talented musicians. But they also obviously knew hip-hop. And Rob thinks he can rap, but he really can't rap, though. You know what I'm saying? So we would never let him get on stage and kick a whack rhyme, but he would want to. But anyway, that's another story. But but really, it's like, it's great to see jazz artists who have grew up and are familiar with hip-hop and know it, because hip-hop is such an important voice and culture and musicianship.
Absolutely.
And obviously, Jay Dilla has influenced a lot of a generation of musicians that I hear now.
Why don't you talk a bit, because he was a big good friend of yours and a big collaborator, and he's still, for the people who know Jay Dilla know, but there's a vast, unwashed hip-hop fans who don't know what he contributed. Could you talk about Jay Dilla a minute?
Yeah, Jay Dilla is, he's a center point of the black pool of genius. He's like someone who grew up in Detroit, grew up in the hood. Shout out to the D. Yeah. From right there on McNichols, McNicks, wherever that is, McNick, Eastside. That he grew up around there, but he had this dichotomy where like he had a hood about him, but he knew all the music, the jazz. I met him at Q-Tip's house back in 95. This dude was digging for records because he did beats. Some of his first music that got out to the industry was on Tribe Called Quest Beats, Rhymes, and Life album. And then from there, you know, his group Slum Village, he influenced and produced everybody from me, the song I did, The Light, to that whole like Water for Chocolate album, Electric Circus, and on. But also from D'Angelo, he's influenced to I've walked in the studios and Pharrell like saw J Dilla and was like, we used to call him the God because he influenced so many. Yeah. And he just was pure with the music. He wasn't gonna do the, I've never met anybody as just as pure as he is with the music. And he did Erykah Badu's music, some
that whole era of the neo soul thing. He is a crucial part of that whole movement.
Yeah, but his sound was definitely not neo-soul, but it was like a funk, soulful sound to it. Yeah. But it was like, it had that drums that was like, it just give you that hump, it give you like a bounce. And then and his musicianship was just amazing. You got to check out, if y'all haven't heard J Dilla's music, just check out Dilla Donuts. Dilla Donuts, he made that album when we were living in L.A. He was sick with lupus, and he was basically dying. And he passed in 2006, but he and I had an apartment together, and he was making that album in our front room.
Wow. Donuts, those of you need to check it out if you haven't heard it. Yeah. Let's just shift gears a bit, because obviously it's a film festival, and you're an actor now.
Yeah.
You
say that seriously?
Yeah. No, but when did you, like, you're an artist, you're making records, you're touring. When did you decide that you wanted to become an actor? What sort of brought you over?
You know, I was making music, and I was like, what is next? Because I was just doing music, and I was growing into music, but I just felt like I felt this thing yearning in me to do something else. And especially because I made this album like Water for Chocolate, and I was looking to spread things out and do new things. And I tried playing the piano. Actually, I had Robert teaching me, and I just wasn't good at it. So I was like, man, what am I going to do? And a friend of mine connected me with this acting coach and said, just go to acting class. And the first class I stepped into, I had that feeling of like when you first get on stage or you first, like when I wrote my first rap, just... It wasn't the exact feeling, but it was a feeling of like, man, I really love this. And I'm not good at it yet, but I can be good at it. I want to be great at it. So I just started studying acting. At that point, I would tour, making music, working on music, but I would go to acting class.
You remember your first performance on Girlfriends?
Yeah, I was super nervous, man. Oh, my God. Yo, I mean, don't get me wrong. I've probably been nervous on a lot of things I've done in film and... But Girlfriends, I mean, I had a few lines in that thing, and I was going over and over, just going over the lines over. And I still was like, I look at that thing and be like, oh, man, I was bad. That was bad acting, bro. But I'm grateful.
You had to get a start somewhere.
Yeah, I did. I did. I mean, it's for me, it's like I really, through acting, started to learn new things about myself. And I think the thing for me that I love most about any art is that I can learn. So the reason why I'm still passionate about writing raps is because I'm seeking out new stuff. I'm learning how to work with my voice better. I'm learning about, when I'm reading new things, I'm like learning new philosophy and growing. That's helping me with raps. Well, when I do a film, studying a character, I learn so much about people.
Yeah, I was wondering about that for you, because so much of what hip hop is I. It is the voice of the MC and his vision of the world. And acting is basically suppressing your eye for
something else. Nelson, I'm glad you said that, because, oh, man, I feel like my raps now are more about weed than ever. I don't even like, you know, sometimes I just want to show I'm an MC. I'm just going to talk about me. But I like talking about we.
Yeah.
Yeah. And acting is so much about we. And I think that aspect really drew me into it also because I got to be a part of a team. All the ideas was not like, okay, I need to come up with the ideas. I need to work on my character and also work with the director. But I'm working with a team. And it's, if I'm doing good in the scene, I still want the other person to be great in the scene too. And I want to learn about this person that's a chef or that's a photographer or that's a filmmaker. If I'm studying to play that character, you get another sense of compassion when you do these things.
Absolutely. Like
when you walk in somebody's shoes, even for, you know, even if for that little amount of time or just getting to know the people and talk to people because you do more extensive talking and research.
Absolutely.
So it's like, man, this is what life is about, like being able to go around to different cities, different countries. To be truthful, the first time I went to the hood in L.A. was to do research, and I felt bad. I was like, damn, I ain't know it was like I was missing that blackness in L.A., and I went to Watts just to do some research for this character.
Was that the street?
Street King.
Street King. Yeah.
I went there for
you. Were scary in that, man.
I was scared.
You said damn right.
Yeah. I was. Thank you, man. yeah, man.
Well, one of the weird things about your career as an actor to me is that you're one of the nicest people, but you played a hitman and run all night.
Yeah.
And John Wick, and I had a list. Like you've been hitman in at least five movies.
Yeah.
The Wanted. So how do you access? You really are a lovely person.
Thank you.
But you're always you're on screen. You're killing people left and right.
Well, I mean, I think it's. First of all, obviously, we all got light and darkness to us, and the darkness that I probably can't express because I do care about people and I do like work on being a child of God, and I work on being a better human being, I guess I get to express it and learn about it in those characters and put it out there. I remember when we were doing Street Kings, I was filming this scene with this brother who was a blood from out in L.A.
You talking about
Bones.
Bone, yeah.
Bone. I was filming with Bones, and I said we had this scene when we were shooting this character. And, you know, when you're filming, you're doing it over and over. And I remember feeling all that energy from these like rifles just going off. And I was like, man, this is crazy, man. Like I felt it in my body. I felt the weight of it. And then he was like, yeah, but this is good, man. Cause at least we get to go home after this. We shot this in a movie.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, for me, I like getting to do some dark characters, but not just only dark. Like I'm saying, because I also, one thing I learned is like somebody commits a murder. That's not all. They're not only a murderer.
Uh-huh.
You know, like they also a human being. They may be a father. They may be a mother, you know, a sister. So it makes me dive into the people more. And I like getting to do those characters because I try to take the stereotype out of some of those characters that we see. And I just, you know, shoot, I don't get to, I ain't trying to shoot nobody in real life. So let me do that shit in a movie.
So I just have to ask this question. We talked about this one time. I love the John Wick movies. And have some of the best action sequences being made right now. You have a fight with Keanu Reeves where you guys basically roll down a stone staircase through a window onto another plaza. And I was just curious, the leap, how much of that is you, number one?
Man, we did I would say like 98% of all our stunts like is us that you see in that film.
It's incredible choreography.
The choreography is phenomenal. It was like when I got to do John Wick, I said I knew I was going to a new level of fight technique, movie fighting, slash learning what real jiu-jitsu and all these things are, and just a new level of when it came to action because those guys had come from the world of Matrix and all the way up to The Raid, you know, The Raid.
I love Raid Redemption.
The Raid Redemption is incredible.
Woo.
So when it comes to action, so I was like, man, I was ready. And Keanu was, I loved working with him because he just wanted to train and train. And if we didn't get it right, he'd be like, it don't have that flavor. Let's get that flavor. And I was like, yeah, I need that flavor, man. So so we would do it until it was, we do it till it's done, like till it's right.
How bruised did you get?
Oh, man, you know, you definitely get beat up. You get, it's times, especially Keanu, like he's a great human being, really good guy. But when you're in the middle of it, it's hard when you throw in an elbow, you ain't gonna always miss. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's just, and your energy is up and it's 5 a.m. I remember we were filming at the One World Center and it was like 5 a.m. and we fighting and, you know, we rehearsed this stuff. And then the thing about that director, Chad, who I love, he is incredible, but he wanted to switch up the choreography right on the spot.
Oh, wow.
So it's like you've worked two months on a scene and a fight scene, and then he like, nah, let's change this. And they just showed him the fight scene the day before and said, do you like it? He like, yeah, I like it. But then we get to there that day, and it's like he changes it up. But you know, the one thing I love is the preparation that they took me through, 8711, Chad and those guys. It made me ready for anything. I feel like, man, bring it. I'm ready. Like,
You're talking about the fight you had on the subway?
On the subway.
With the knife.
Yeah, with the knife. He was, yeah.
Love that.
Yeah, he was, we changed a lot of stuff up, but it's good, man. And I'll tell you, that concrete in Rome ain't nice, but you can't be crying about, like, you know, when you got a little bruise or whatever, you can't be out there like, oh man, my ribs hurt. They'll be like, come on, dude. Because they, you know, all of them is like, come on. They like that, got that macho, like, let's go. And I ain't gonna be no punk either. I'm Southside.
So I want to talk, before we go to the audience, we'll be taking questions in a couple of minutes from the audience, is Black Samurai, which is a big project I know you're working on. Could you, let's talk about that in a minute. What is Black Samurai?
Yeah, so Black Samurai is a television series that we're producing. Freedom Road, our film and television production company. I'm starring in it. It's based on some novels from the 70s. It dealt with this black brother who, man, he can kick ass. He incredible. Like, but his story is like, he got a story to him. And he's a complex individual. We're looking to shoot a series. We're about to shoot a series soon with Black Samurai. We got some great, great writers and a great team we're putting together. And I'm looking forward to it because it's another level of me getting to play. I get to be a lead on this show and learn martial arts and new forms of martial arts. Oh, yeah, and we're producing it with RZA, too. RZA is a producer on it. And but I also get to dive into a character that's international, that's in-depth. He has a life and deals with life struggles. And we get to deal with some of the wisdom of the Buddhists and the Japanese mantras that go on. So it's like many levels to it. And it's exciting because I love drama and I love action. So I get to do both in Black Samurai.
All right, so let's do some little, get the audience involved. Speak up.
As a young creative attempting to live my best life, I'm learning more and more the importance of mentorship and would love to know what you guys' take on finding the best mentor and how to go about doing that is, or like some of the best mentors in your life, what have they been?
Well, I think mentorship is very important. You identify people that you admire, identify people that you come across that are intelligent and it got an energy that you really respect. And you try to form relationships with those people without being a pest.
Yeah.
You know, and from there, like if you don't, you know, I say it's a balance of having mentors, but also knowing, empowering yourself to know you can accomplish a lot of things and you can attract those mentors. Some of those people will be attracted to what you have too. So you find those that are attractive and you also develop your skill and your abilities enough so that they want to connect with you.
Most of the people I've mentored, I mean, I think mentorship works. You're usually chosen by your mentor. People have emailed me, be my mentor. I'm like, that's not going to work. It has to be, like you said, I see someone who's got drive and has got a plan, and can I be part of helping them? And that's how it usually works. The people who've helped me, I wrote something they liked when I was young, or I asked a question. I say one of the tricks of getting a mentor is whenever you meet someone that you want them sort of to give you advice, research them and find something that they did that failed. And then you go, oh man, I really loved fill in the blank. That means, wow, you really like that? Because everyone's going to tell them they like the hit. But if you like the one, because often the one that didn't work is often the thing they have closest to their heart, because they have that feeling about it. So that's I find that that's a good technique.
Well, let me say this. Let me say this in opposite of what Nelson just said. I would prefer that you come up and be like, man, I didn't like Electric Circus, but this other thing was right. You know, meaning that's what I've had people come say that to me repeatedly. They didn't like. So it still would get my attention, you know, to be honest. Like, you still would get my attention if you said it in a respectful way. But I think, you know, it's
just don't say it was whack.
Yeah. But the key is what Nelson said. You have to, like, if you fresh, you're going to attract it. And when you go to people seeking mentorship, like, some people come and say, man, I want to be in the industry comic. What should I do? And I'm like, well, what do you want to do? Like, what are you,
exactly.
Like, who are you? Like, meaning, as Nelson said, you got to have some direction, have some ideas yourself. And people, you know, then you can hook people in. You'll get the fish then when you start having some ideas yourself. I'm mumbling on now, so I guess we can go to the next question.
All right. Okay.
Common, Testify, favorite album, favorite song, love it.
Thank you.
Where do you find inspiration? You know, you're working on all these different projects, trying to execute them at the best of your ability. Like, how do you dig deep? Where do you get your inspiration from?
I dig deep by just being in connection with people. And I feel like the more I connect with people, like meaning just everyday people that I connect with, whether it's my family sometimes or friends that I grew up with or people I know now and meet now, I always feel like I want to be a voice for them. And be a voice for them, whether it's through music or if I see the gentlemen and women I just met going into the prisons, I feel like I got to be a voice for them now, you know, and that gives me inspiration. I always felt like throughout my life, if I see anybody getting treated not right, and that means whether I can look at a neighborhood and see it's people that's poor, then I feel like I got to do something to raise the level, to improve that situation and get it to an equal level. And that's a lot of my inspiration. And also, I feel like, man, we, as you said, young lady, we want to live our life the best life. I feel like, man, God gives us this chance to be on the planet. What are we going to do with it? What am I going to do with it? So every day, I've been able to get from just sitting around, just kicking and drinking to being like, all right, I'm about to spend my time doing something very productive. I'm going to read a script. I'm going to study on this. I'm going to work on my music. I'm going to go learn some things about this. And then, you know, I go have my wine when I chill after that or something. But I got to take care of business first. So some of that is just making sure I use this gift to the gifts to the highest ability, the highest capacity.
Anybody on this side? Can we? Yeah, right there we go.
Good evening, both Common and Nelson. I don't know which one I'm more of a fan of at this point. Do you believe that artists, rappers, musicians, when they have something like a Donald Trump or something like a LA riots or some sort of social injustice flashpoint to react to, that it drives up the creativity and the timelessness of art as opposed to when things are going well and the art suffers? Do you believe that?
I do. Nelson, you want?
Okay. I was gonna say is that every historical epoch where there's conflict, it does help certain artists. Some people can be explicitly political, but for others, it brings them into an internal journey that could also be just as powerful. So I think it. I mean, I put it, one of the best periods of hip hop was the crack era, which was a terrible time in this country and under Reagan and all that stuff. And some great art came out of that. I don't necessarily think we needed to have the terrible stuff to happen, but often artists respond with some of their best work because it touches their friends and their community in a way that's inspiring. And anger, as much as love, inspires art.
Yeah, and I also believe that, like, artists, you know, when we have something that we're passionate about, we speak up. It's a truth that comes out at that time, but you have to be passionate about it. I think this era we're in now is just as tough as the Reagan era in many instances. But the artist is speaking up. They feel it. They feel it, and they feel it in their spirits. And I think one thing that we had in hip-hop that you had from that 80s era is a lot of people were kind of educated politically to a certain degree, like socially and politically, so they knew what to talk about. Like, I was learning about things from Chuck D and from KRS-One and Rakim. I learned things from them, but they had something to say. They knew what was going on. And I don't know if it was age or whatever the case, but they knew. And I think even in this crucial era, I think the music can be more powerful, or the art will be more powerful, if the people are passionate about it and they really do care.
One more, I think, over on this side.
As a creator, I'm sure a lot of people, you know, pitch to you a lot of different projects and ideas, but how do you decide on which projects you take on or roles you take on versus the one that you're like, eh, I'll pass on that one?
I really try to choose things that when I'm reading it, I'm like, I want to keep reading it. I'm like, ah, this is dope. When I read something, I want it to be like, damn, I wish I could write this, or I wish I would have wrote this, or this is a great character for me to play, or and this story is dope, and it feels fresh, and I can do something with it as an actor, like take it somewhere. Those are the things that I really look at, and it starts, honestly, with a title. To me, I like titles. When I go to a bookstore, I look at the titles, and that can interest me in a book. So when I start reading the first page of a script, I could tell if the writer is really, really fresh writer. I can look at the first page, and I'm like, okay. But, I mean, I don't necessarily, the story could get better. Things could get better, even if the writer is pretty good. But the story could get better. But overall, it's just about the same way I feel when I read something that inspires me to write. That's how I am when I come across a script. I want to be inspired to be a part of it. In fact, the first movie I was a part of, Smoking Aces, I read that script and was like, man, I got to be a part of this. And it was the first time I honestly was, because I was going on auditions, but it was the first time I really read the whole script, because some scripts I would get was just like, ah, it's cool. But as soon as I started reading it, I felt it. So I just pick roles and movies that I feel like they really got something to say, and they're saying something, and it's in alignment with the quality of work that I want to do.
The Tribeca Film Festival takes place every year in New York City. To learn more about all of our programs, head to TribecaFilm.com.